Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 17, Punishment and Reward of Kali, text number 34. Is that right? I hope so, because that's the verse I was reading last time. Jasmin Hari Bhagavan Nijamana.
Jasmin Hari Bhagavan Nijamana.
Ijatma Murti Yajatam Santanoti.
Ijatma Murti Yajatam Santanoti.
Kamanamokhan Stira Jangamanam.
Kamanamokhan Stira Jangamanam.
Anta Bahirvayuri Vaisha Atma.
Anta Bahirvayuri Vaisha Atma.
Jasmin,
yes.
In such sacrificial ceremonies, Hari, the Supreme Lord, Bhagavan,
the
Personality of Godhead,
Vijamana,
being worshipped,
Ijjatma,
the soul of all worshipful deities. Murtihi,
in the forms.
Yajatam,
those who worship.
Sham, welfare. Tanoti,
spreads.
Kaman,
desires.
Amoghan, inviolable. Stira jangamanam. Of all the moving and non-moving.
Antaha.
Within.
Bahi.
Outside.
Vayu.
Air.
Eva.
Like.
Ishaha.
Of all of them.
Atma.
Spirit soul. In all sacrificial ceremonies, although sometimes a demigod is worshipped, the Supreme Lord, Personality of Godhead, is worshipped because he is the super soul of everyone and exists both inside and outside like the air. Thus it is he only who awards all welfare to the worshipper. Good one. Maybe time to get some new microphone stands that work instead of always just falling down. This is the nature of material energy falling down. The influence. It is even sometimes seen that demigods like Indra and Chandra are worshipped and offered sacrificial awards, yet the rewards of all such sacrifices are awarded to the worshipper by the Supreme Lord. And it is the Lord only who can offer all welfare to the worshipper. The demigods, although worshipped, cannot do anything without the sanction of the Lord, because the Lord is the supersoul of everyone, both moving and non-moving. In Bhagavad Gita 9.23, the Lord himself confirms this in the following shloka. Ye pyanya devata bhakta yajante shradayam vitaha te pimam eva kunteya. Whatever a man may sacrifice to other gods, O son of Kunti, is really meant for me alone. But it is offered without true understanding. The fact is that the Supreme Lord is one without a second. There is no God other than the Lord himself. Thus the Supreme Lord is eternally transcendental to the material creation. But there are many who worship the demigods like the sun, the moon and Indra, who are only material representatives of the Supreme Lord. These demigods are indirect, qualitative representations of the Supreme Lord. A learned scholar or devotee, however, knows who is who. Therefore, he directly worships the Supreme Lord and is not diverted by the material qualitative representations. Those who are not so learned worship such qualitative material representations, but their worship is unceremonious because it is irregular. Om Ajnana Chimirandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmaye Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadana Hiyam Tatisva Padantikam Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Garim Yatkripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Jena Tarinam. It seems that this is a little bit of an aside. This particular point, but of course it's an important point. At least when I say it's an aside, it's kind of doesn't fit in with this discussion of or this storyline, which is really Maharaj Parikshit is chastising Kali. Is that right? But there's a little point added here. It is a very important point, and of course it's a consistent point that is it's a point that's consistently presented by our acharyas, and an important point that we should understand very, very clearly, that you know the demigods are certainly worshipable. But worshipable in so much as they are representatives of the Lord. Just like a devotee is worshipable. But when we worship a devotee who appears just like an ordinary man, and we worship them just like Srila Prabhupada was criticized when he came to Melbourne because the devotees were bowing down to him and offering him worship, and the newspaper reporters were asking him, you know, why are they worshipping you as if you were God? Right? You're just an ordinary man. And of course Prabhupada said, you know, the spiritual master is worshipped because he's the representative of God. The demigods are supposed to be the representatives of God also, so therefore they're worshipable in that sense. So the spiritual master is worshipable. He's an ordinary man, but he's worshipped as good as God because he's the representative of God. And as Prabhupada pointed out, I travel from place to place to collect the obeisances. But I don't collect them for myself. I collect them and I pass them on to the Lord. So the demigods are worshipped sometimes in Vedic ceremonies, and you know, they're very powerful beings. The administrators of the universal affairs. And so therefore, as the representatives of the Lord and as the administrators of the universe, very, very powerful, they should also be honoured and respected by everybody. But just because they're very powerful and have very exalted positions, that doesn't mean that they are God themselves. In one sense, they are God. Just like we're God also. Right? But Prabhupada qualifies this oneness. And he uses a word here. Does anybody remember what that word is? Prabhupada uses to describe how the demigods are representatives of the Lord. What does he say they are? Anybody remember? Starts with a Q. Qualitative. Right? Qualitative. Prabhupada used this word qualitative in a particular way. There's a number of examples. A couple of examples that Prabhupada would use. Who can tell me? There are two examples that Prabhupada would use in order to describe how the living entity is qualitatively the same as God.
Water.
Water, yeah, water's one of them. What's the other one?
Fire.
Fire, that wasn't the one I was thinking of.
Gold.
Yes. The gold in the gold ring is the same as the gold in the mine. But the gold ring is not equal to the gold in the mine. Or the salt water. Salt water is, a drop of salt water is wet, it's liquid, and it's salty. So it has the same qualities as the ocean. But the ocean is far more broad and expansive. So even though the demigods are very, very powerful in comparison to us, right, and they're qualitatively one with the Lord, we're also qualitatively one in that we're spiritual and he's spiritual. Just the fact is that he knows everything, he's aware of everything, and we're only aware of, you know, a little bit. Even the things closest to us, we're not fully conscious of. So the demigods are qualitatively one, but quantitatively, even though they're very, 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 very powerful, at least from our perspective, in relationship to Krishna, they're just, Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, they're just a part, a fraction of a spark of his splendor. But foolish human beings, with a poor fund of knowledge, basically, without understanding things in the right perspective, worship the demigods, thinking that they're the supreme. Just like sometimes also, we've been discussing at Krishna Fest, sometimes people worship a man as if he's God. And he lets them, encourages them even. Yes, I am God. There's one so-called guru who visited Melbourne just recently, and his disciples hanker for his touch. Well, I've seen videos of them hugging him and crying. Got the Shakti Pat. Right? But we should know these kind of things are bogus. You know, spiritual knowledge is not transferable through just touch. Well, it is. It is, actually. But you have to be touched by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? There's the occasion of Lord Chaitanya travelling through the Jarikanda forest, and he touched the, was it the tiger or the elephant with his foot? Was it in that story? And then the elephant just started chanting, "Hurry ball, hurry ball." So I guess there is a precedent. There are precedents of, who's another one? Dhruva Maharaj. When Dhruva Maharaj saw the Lord, he was stunned. Couldn't, you know, wanted to say something but couldn't. Right? Voice choked up in the Shikshastakam prayers. You know, gotta get up. My voice is, can't say anything because I'm full of ecstatic emotion. So Dhruva Maharaj was full of ecstatic emotion. But then the Lord touched him with his conch. And then he was able to offer wonderful prayers. So yes, in the context of worshipping, of associating with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you may get prema, or love for Godhead, through touch. But that's not, you know, that is a very, that's, you know, it's the exception that proves the rule. The proper method of receiving transcendental knowledge is to hear the Vedic literature from the authorized teacher. Right? None of this touching business. You know, touching is feeling. And that's just really on the physical level. This is not the proper transmission of transcendental knowledge, yet people... There's also, there's a hugging mama as well, isn't there? Is that right? So, you know, people create their own processes of self-realization. Manufacture. But as is mentioned in the Bhagavatam, Dharmam Tusakshat Bhagavad Pranitam, the actual process of receiving spiritual knowledge and the actual process of worship is delineated by the Lord Himself. And even the Lord, who He doesn't have to receive transcendental knowledge, neither does He have to worship anyone, but He follows these processes. Even the Lord in the Chaitanya Charitamrita and in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the 10th canto, we find instances where Krishna is actually worshipping the demigods. Not because they're superior to him, but because that's the custom, that's the proper etiquette, the proper, and so Krishna doesn't deviate from the etiquettes, the standards of Vedic culture. But the worship of the demigods is because they're the worshipable representatives of the Lord, not because they're the Lord Himself. And as is mentioned in this verse, any benediction that's given by the demigods ultimately is bestowed by Krishna. He's within, just here, the words, Ahanta Bahir Vayur Ivaisha Atma. He's within everything. This word Bahir, just like we sing Bahir Nasringo, Ridaye Nasringo, right? Bahir means you're outside everything. And here Anta is the same as within the heart, Ridaya. As the super soul. And so any benedictions that the demigods are able to give their followers or their worshippers ultimately are sanctioned by Krishna. Right? There is nobody anywhere able to do anything without the sanction of the super soul. This is why we, you know, Krishna's described Sarva Karana Karanam Anadi Adi Govindam Sarva Karana Karanam. He's the cause of everything. So, I think this is the main point. Just have a look at some of my notes here. Yeah. The fact is that the Supreme Lord is one without a second. Right? Prabhupada would often quote this verse, Natasya karyam karanam cha vidyate na tat samas cha vyadikas cha drisyate. Drisyate means to see. Na tat samas, there is no one equal to the Lord. So demigods are very, very great, powerful personalities, but they're not equal to Krishna. And even though Krishna may on occasion worship the demigods out of etiquette, just like one devotee asked me the other day, why does Krishna wear tilak and worship Lord Narayan? Why does he do that? Because he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Why does he worship Narayan? That means he's worshipping himself. So why does he do that? Anybody know the answer to the question?
There is the etiquette.
Yeah.
Vedic.
Yes. Yeah. What?
Set the example?
Yeah, maybe.
In
Vrindavan, yeah.
Narayan.
That's right. Why did Krishna wear tilak and worship Narayan? Because that's what his dad did. Huh? That's what his dad did. And you follow your dad. That's the answer. You follow your father. Your father's worshipping Narayan, so you... But when his father was worshipping Indra, what did he do? He said, stop it. Huh? Stop it. Which outraged Indra. So much so that he wanted to kill all of the inhabitants of Vrindavan. This is how we can tell the demigods are not the supreme. Because they get their worship taken away from them and then they get upset. But the worship's not for them. Right? When we're offering obeisances, we're not offering it to the... Well, we are offering it to the devotee, but we're actually offering it to the super soul also that is within the heart. Who's making the devotee great. Who's empowering the demigods. But then when Lord Indra had his puja taken away, then he got upset. Which is another example. And then he committed great offences. You know, wanting to kill... Of all of the offences that you commit, wanting to kill a devotee is probably the greatest offence. You know, you could swear at them and... You can think ill of devotees. Oh, I don't recommend it. That's the least offensive. And then you can blaspheme the devotees. That's also not recommended. But the highest level is wanting to kill the devotee. So Indra, supposedly a devotee, decides he wants to kill all the residents of Vrindavan because they took away his worship. See, because even sometimes the demigods become attached. Just like sometimes, and they shouldn't, gurus... We can't say acharyas because an acharya doesn't. But they become attached to being worshipped. But one shouldn't be. So, no one is greater than or equal to Krishna, he is the supreme. And whenever the demigods are worshipped, ultimately that worship should be going to the Lord, should be passed on.
Just as the guru takes the worship, so the demigods also take the worship, but it is given to Krishna, the super soul, the supreme personality of Godhead. Now let me have a look at you. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Krishna mentions this point in the Bhagavad Gita, Mata Parataram Nanyat Kinchidasti Jananjaya Mayi Sarvam Idam Protam Sutre Manikana Iva. Everything rests upon me as pearls are strung on a thread. That means that Krishna is the supreme personality. What's another verse? Aham Savasya Prabhavo Mata Sarvam Pravatate Iti Matva Bhajante Mam Buddha Bhava Samanvitaha. Everything, both material and spiritual, emanates from me. The wise who know this worship me with all of their hearts in devotional service. So, you know, there is a place for offering worship to everyone and respecting every, you know, the basic principle of relationships is respect. That's Lord Chaitanya's instruction. What is it? Trinadupi sanichina tororeva sahishnana amanina amanina manadena kitaniya sadahari. We should be offering all respects to others and not expecting any respect for ourselves. Indra somehow didn't get to chant the Shastika in the morning that particular day. And he forgot. And sometimes we forget too. But we shouldn't. One should, but Prabhupada says here, a learned scholar or devotee, however, knows who is who. Right? That means we should know who we are, we should know who Krishna is, and we should know how everybody else fits into that relationship between us and the relationship to us. So we should know superiors, like the demigods, and like other more senior devotees. We should know our peers, those who we are friendly with. Of course, we should be friendly to everybody. And juniors, those who we should be supportive of and kind and merciful to. And we should recognize the Supreme Personality of God. We should also recognize the demons as well. This is a platform of a Madhyam. So one should know, yes, Krishna is the ultimate purpose of this sacrifice. Otherwise, not worshipping without this understanding is, as Prabhupada mentions here, he quotes this verse 9:23, Avidhi Purvakam, or at the end of the purport he says, those who are not so learned worship such qualitative material representations. Material, he says here, qualitative and material. Huh? The demigods, qualitative and material. So they're qualitatively one, but still on the material platform, endowed with material facilities, albeit very powerful. But their worship is it's interesting how Prabhupada puts this. Those who are not so learned worship such qualitative material representations, but their worship is unceremonious because it is irregular. And that's mentioned in this verse 9:23 from the Bhagavad Gita in the last line. Avidhi Purvakam, the worship of the demigods, where the worshipper thinks that the demigod is the be-all and end-all and is the supreme, is offered without true understanding. Avidhi means against the rules and regulations. There's another verse that Prabhupada often quotes, Sruti Shriti Puranadi Pancharatriki Vidhimvina. That means without, Vidhimvina is the same thing. Without following the rules and regulations, without following the proper understanding, utpatayava kapate, becomes a disturbance within society. Because people get the wrong idea. I remember when one of my friends was introducing me to Krishna consciousness. But I used to go around to his place to smoke a bit of dope. And he had Jagannath, Balaram and Subhadra on his mantelpiece. Right? And whenever we would be having a bit of marijuana, then he would there was a little cloth. He would get the cloth and put it over the deities. Being respectful. And then he would say, "We'll offer this to Lord Shiva." And so therefore it'll be, you know, prasadam. So this is avidhi purvakam. Well and truly. You see, people, you know, they see things being done, but they misunderstand it. It's not understood properly. Which is why the devotees have to... Actually, I owe a lot to that. And I mentioned this on a number of occasions. You know, actually, I owe a lot to that particular person because he took me to the temple on the first occasion that I went to the temple. So, you know, what does Prabhupada say? You have to take gold even from a filthy place. Right? And I used to, after that, I used to go around to his place, not so much to waste time, but with the hope that he would say, "Yes, go to the temple." Especially, I wanted to go and have something to eat. I thought the prasadam was pretty good. But you know, this point here that a learned scholar or devotee, however, knows who is who. This is we should know the proper relationship and the purpose of the worship, if and when it's performed, or if we're participating in it. It's very important that the devotees are able to explain these things in the proper way so that people understand how to worship the demigods and in what circumstances one might worship the demigods. Although it's interesting. Prabhupada didn't condone the worship of demigods in ISKCON temples because he wanted to establish this point. Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. You know, I've been listening to Prabhupada's Chaitanya Charitamrita lectures. Prabhupada says, all you need to know to be advanced is that Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. That's advancement. Brijanabhu tells the story of how he was preaching in Hong Kong. And he was reporting his progress to Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was concerned that the devotees weren't disturbing the worshippers of the demigods by saying, "You shouldn't worship the demigods. You know, you should only worship the Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead." Because Prabhupada knew that would upset people. In fact, in Singapore, Malaysia, the devotees' preaching was very strong and it upset people. But yet, you know, Prabhupada's instructions in the Bhagavad Gita are very clear. You know, Krishna is, you only worship Krishna. And our standard within ISKCON temples is we only worship Krishna. We don't have Ganesh or, you know, Lord Shiva somewhere. Although in some places they do. But Prabhupada didn't want that because he didn't want people to misunderstand. He wanted them to understand very, very clearly. You know, one day one lady came to the temple. I was sitting over in the corner here chanting some japa, and she came up to me. She said, "How come you don't have Ganesh in the temple?" And I said, "We worship the deity of Ganesh, Lord Nrisimhadev." Right? So we worship the same person as Ganesh worships. I don't think she understood what I was saying. But but we follow in the footsteps of Lord Ganesh by worshipping his worshipable Lord, Lord Nrsingadev. Right in the Brahma Samhita, it mentions how Lord Ganesh holds the lotus feet on his tumuli. It mentions. Right? But Prabhupada was concerned that the devotees weren't disturbing the worshippers of the demigods in their preaching. So on the one hand, we have to preach the supremacy of the absolute personality, the supreme personality of Godhead, the absolute. But we don't want to disturb the minds of the ignorant. But we have to demonstrate to them and explain to them and teach them who is actually the supreme. Who is the who is learned? What is learning? Learning means to, you know, understand who is the supreme, who is worshipable, and how to worship them properly. Which is what we're teaching, what Prabhupada's teaching. Yeah. A learned scholar or devotee, however, knows who is who. Therefore, he directly worships the Supreme Lord and is not diverted by the material qualitative representations. The material qualitative representations. Okay, I might finish here. Does anybody have any comments or questions?
Two questions. One, before you were saying about the people that have followers but they're so-called spiritual leaders but they're not genuine or bona fide. And I was seeing recently the TV series Abhay Charan.
About who?
Abhay Charan.
Yeah.
The Prabhupada's life story.
Yeah.
And it shows how Bhaktivinoda Thakur exposed this bogus leader.
Which one? He exposed a few. Vishpakshena. He was having Rasalila with his gopis. And that one?
One that made fire.
Yeah, that was him, I think. Yeah, he had mystic powers and it was all stored in his hair. He must have had big dreads. So when they got him into the court, they chopped off his hair. That one, right? And then he lost his power. That's material power. If you keep your power in your hair, and then your hair gets cut off and you lose your power, that's not. Anyway, go on. Sorry.
So, is that also what advanced devotees should do? Like expose these leaders that are misguiding many innocent people, or not innocent, but people that are misguiding.
Yes, that's an interesting question. Basically, the question is: should devotees expose imposters? Is that right? Yes. Yes and no. See, in one sense, these people are demons. Right? And so we avoid their association. And the followers of demons are also demons. Isn't it? And so we are recommended to find the innocent. Right? Rather than, you know, run around exposing demons. You'd be doing that all the time because there's just so many demons around. And you'd just be in confrontation all the time. So we're recommended to find the innocent. We can warn them about the demons. Right? But, you know, exposing imposters, it was Bhaktivinoda Thakur's duty because he was a magistrate. And so he was working with the local, you know, he was magistrate in India, was a powerful position, and He was responsible for ensuring that law and order was established within the communities that he was the magistrate of. So he was working with the constabulary and, you know, the officials and so forth. So that was his job. Right? And he was a devotee, so he was rightly situated in exposing such personalities. But, you know, if we're just Sankirtan devotees, you know, our business is to chant Hare Krishna and do some book distribution and distribute prasadam. And, you know, exposing and putting people in jail, you know, that's not really our service. Do you know what I mean? So we, you know, we should understand time, place and circumstance, what's appropriate. I remember one time we... I don't think this is working. It's not. We were doing book distribution. We used to hand out books free. And we went to a housing commission flat. And that way you could put books in everybody's letterbox. And there's lots of letterboxes. But somebody had put some advertising materials in beforehand. And we thought, oh, these stupid karmic demons put all of this, you know, advertising in here. So we just pulled it all out and threw it on the floor. So then the next day, Balaram calls me up at the office and he said, were you guys distributing books in such and such a place? Well, you know, you made a mess in the foyer by throwing all the advertising literature away, and then you left your calling card, one of our books. So not very bright. Wasn't very intelligent preaching. But we were thinking, stupid karmi demons. This advertising material is just prajalpa. We'll give them Prabhupada's books. So we gave them Prabhupada's books but left a mess behind which really didn't represent Prabhupada very well. So we don't, you know, time, place and circumstance, we should be mature in our presentation. Keep it simple and short.
But I think it just seems like, I mean, from my impression, like bhakti yoga, to practice it, there's more of a process. And I suppose if someone who doesn't know anything, you know, if someone starts looking from outside, it looks like there's sort of more work involved. But I personally understand it's quite enjoyable for people to do that. But I suppose other sort of schools or gurus kind of offer like a quick fix, the hard goal, you know, a quick fix, and I think maybe a lot of people find that attractive. And then so how do you sort of get past that? I mean, it's, you know, and that's why we have a lot that draws a lot of other people, you know, other schools, because it's a lot easier maybe and a lot less challenging.
Yeah, it's not challenging at all.
Yeah.
So what's the question? The question is,
how do you get past it? Yeah, I mean,
people are attracted to hugging mamas. What's new? That's been going on for countless universal creations. We were talking about this the other day at Krishna Fest, and you answered your own question. People are looking for a quick fix, and so they want to be spiritual at the same time. You know, they want to be seen as advanced and in tune, in harmony with everything, and, you know, spiritually enriched. It's kind of a status symbol to be spiritually advanced, right? Because people respect you, isn't it? And who doesn't want to be respected? Who doesn't want to be hugged? But as you say, they want a quick process without having to do anything, right? You know, just they think that spiritual life is cheap. You just walk down the street, and then suddenly one day, bang, I'm self-realized. Come and hug me, right? And I'll make you self-realize too. But it's cheap. It doesn't happen like that. And we know from the Shastra, we know from the examples of the Bhagavatam and from the Chaitanya Charitamrita that to make spiritual advancement requires great effort. You know, it is the highest achievement, the most valuable of all valuables. What would Prabhupada say? The matchless gift. Right? You cannot, it can't be matched anywhere by anything, certainly not from the material realm. And so therefore we should expect that to get the highest, to get the matchless gift, well, matchless gift means it's just given to you, but to take advantage of it requires the performance of or the cultivation of qualities, you know, that are in the mode of goodness and which are ultimately even transcendental to the mode of goodness, but require some effort. What are the qualities of a brahmana? Samo damastaba socham, you know, austerity is required. It doesn't happen just by paying some money or getting hugged. It's not that simple, it's not that cheap. And so people want a quick fix because they're not prepared to pay the price. Right? So we can understand that these cheap offerings are actually not worth anything. You know, Prabhupada says you go and find a diamond. If somebody's selling a diamond very cheaply, then you can understand that's not a diamond. Right? If somebody's selling gold in the marketplace very, very cheaply, then you can understand it's not gold. So, why are people attracted and what can we do about it? There's not very much we can do about it except try to give them an opportunity to take to the real process of spiritual advancement, of spiritual practice, which may require some undertakings. Which does require some undertakings, but we, you know, Lord Chaitanya has a very interesting process. He's described Namo Mahavadanyaya, very magnanimous, because he freely gives the process. And the process is very simple and easy. Chanting of Hare Krishna. And the following, the practice of devotional service. But the application is rigorous. You know, one has to apply it carefully, properly, consistently. Right? So, you know, Ratha Yatra, prasadam distribution, book distribution, you know, festivals, Harinam, these things are all designed to attract people so that they get a taste. We freely, we're like business people who freely give out samples, but still, ultimately, one has to pay the price for the goods. Right? So, what to do with it? What do you do with somebody who's a fool? Effectively, what do you do?
Leave them alone.
Yeah, leave them alone. Yeah. There's a saying: "Let sleeping dogs lie." And I can vouch for that. One day, I was out on Sankirtan, and I saw this dog sleeping on the front porch of the house that I was going to sell, and I thought, I'll wake him up. So I went and jumped on it, jumped right next to him, and he jumped up and bit me straight away. So I can recommend let sleeping dogs lie. You know, if you preach to somebody too strongly, I remember preaching to my brother the first time. You know, I'd been going to the temple for 2 weeks or whatever it was, and I was saying, you know, you have to become a devotee, otherwise you become a hog, a dog, a camel, and an ass in your next lifetime. And he just thought I'd gone crazy. You know, yeah, so presentation is everything. And you know, who you're presenting to and how you present, one has to be very expert. And don't be surprised, even after having presented things very nicely, that people won't be interested. Right? Favourable people who take the information and take things inquisitively, but then decide, you know, I don't want to pay the price. We should still be, you know, be friendly, be, you know, okay, no worries. Next time, we'll see you later. Right? Similar kind of answer to Madhuryamrita's question, you know, we don't castigate people who are foolish. You know, maybe Prabhupada could do it, but even he, you know, was careful. Somebody else here? Do you want to hear something about it? You won't hear it from me, probably. I don't know. It's very hot in India now, so it kind of makes sense to water Tulsi. But we water Tulsi every day. Yeah, but isn't it interesting? Isn't it interesting? Even though it is the beginning of Tulsi Jaladan, offering water to Tulsi, Prabhupada set it up so that every day that's what we do. Isn't it?
Yeah.
And why do we do that? Why do we water Tulsi every day?
Says she doesn't die.
Huh? Says she doesn't die. Hare Krishna. Tulsi is eternal. She can't die. No. Wrong. Somebody else worships Tulsi so she doesn't die, but that's the reason why we do it is because we're rendering service to the pure devotee. And rendering service to the pure devotee is beneficial for our making spiritual advancement. Even, you know, chanting Hare Krishna, sitting in front of the Tulsi, is one of the most potent practices of devotional service, recommended in the Nectar of Devotion. Tadbara, Prabhu.
You know, love is unconditional, and you know that unconditional love is the highest of love.
Yeah.
So, why is Krishna like demanding love that you manmana bhava bhavato madhyadi mangamishru? So, he's a super soul, he's a supreme father. So, a father would be asking his children, you always chant my name and you just.
Why does he do that? Because he knows that it's the best thing for us. He's not demanding as such, because he allows you to not think of him, because that's what we want, not to think of him. But he's only recommending what's good for us. Suridam Savabhutanam. He's the well-wisher and friend of everybody. And so he only recommends things that are beneficial for us. But we ignore it. So he's not demanding. He allows us to do what we like. But it's not really, because the rewards of devotional service are usually transcendental blessings, transcendental benefits that can't be measured by, you know, material calculations. And usually business is based on material calculations. And if we're worshipping Krishna with a mercantile mentality, then we're going to be disappointed. We're the ones who are going to be disappointed. Right? Krishna's not going to be disappointed. But we're the ones who are going to be disappointed. So, it's more an affair of the heart. And in worshipping and serving Krishna, we're deepening and strengthening our, you know, the ties of affection between Krishna and us, and the devotees and us. We're, you know, and it's not meant, it's not, it can't be measured in terms of material, because very often the devotees are quite happy to undergo severe austerities and penances and difficulties simply to deepen their relationship with Krishna. And, you know, Krishna actually doesn't give material benefits to his devotees if they're going to be detrimental for them. So it's not a business, not a business deal in a material sense. It may be spiritual business, right? But that's different. And the devotee wants to have a relationship with Krishna, and Krishna wants to have a relationship with us more than we want to have a relationship with him, because we're scared. We have material attachments, and we think, if I give everything to Krishna, then what's left for me? Who's going to look after me? Whereas Krishna says, give everything to me and I'll look after you. But it's not a material, it is business, but it's spiritual business. That's not a bad thing. That's, you know, it looks like material business, but it's not. The activities of the devotees look like the same activities of the materialist, but actually they're very, very, very different, because there's what's going on within the heart. And very often Krishna's revealed. One of the reasons why people don't like, you know, devotional service is because Krishna reveals all of our faults. And where we, and you know, in so doing, makes us humble. But we don't like that because, you know, first of all, we don't want to be humble, we're proud. God knows what of, but we are. What Prabhupada says, a pauper will be proud of his penny. A few purports ago, right? A pauper will be proud of his penny. Bhavananda used to say, you know, the drunkard in the street, he's only got a penny, but when he's spinning, right, you know, he's drunken too much and he's spinning around, he thinks he's the centre of the universe. Right? He's just a drunk. But still he thinks, I'm the centre of the universe, everything's revolving around me. But we don't want to give that up. And Krishna reveals, I'm the centre of the creation and everything revolves around me. But we don't want that. We want everything to revolve around me, not Krishna. You know? So that's why we balk sometimes at surrender, and why people balk, and why they want to, you know, I want a quick process, because ultimately it's still me-centered, me-centric. Oh, I'm feeling the bliss. Hug me. And really, you know, hug me is just actually just material sense gratification. That's what that means, really. Unfortunately, we should finish here. Kondaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhaktivinoda ki jai.